and to Gaza now, where 600 Palestinians, the majority civilians, have so far died, according to authorities. The Israeli death toll in fighting is 29, 27 of them members of the Israeli Defence Forces. Last night, a rocket landed close to the airport in Tel Aviv. US aviation authorities issuing a notice banning all US passenger and cargo flights to and from Ben-Gurion Airport for at least 24 hours. European airlines have also cancelled flights to Israel. The last time the airport was closed, incidentally, to flights for security reasons was in 1991, before the first Gulf War. David Blair is the chief foreign correspondent with the Daily Telegraph. He's in Gaza this morning, and I've been asking him how things have been overnight.
Relatively quiet by the standards of Gaza, but last night Hamas fired two rockets that exploded quite close to Ben-Gurion International Airport outside Tel Aviv and injured two Israelis. And as a result of that, European and American airlines are now suspending flights to Israel. So from their point of view, that would have been a very successful strike.
What about the potential implications of this? Because internationally, this is exactly what Israel does not want to happen. Ben-Gurion is quite an important airport.
Yes, it's a huge blow to Israel's prestige that big airlines, including US airlines like Delta, for example, and European airlines like Lufthansa, now consider Israel to be too unsafe to fly to. So from Hamas's point of view, those two rockets that flew out of Gaza and managed to get all the way through Israel's defenses to Ben-Gurion Airport delivered a very serious message. And Hamas has for quite some time targeted that airport and tried to close it down. And for the first time, well, they haven't closed it down, but they've severely reduced the flow of flights in and out. So you might think that that will increase the pressure on Israel to agree a ceasefire. However, it's perfectly possible it will have the opposite effect. It will make Israel even more determined to press on with this campaign until, as they see it, they've removed the rocket threat.
Benjamin Netanyahu saying that there was no risk to the airport, and I suppose wiping away concerns that rockets were landing in Lod. Just how hollow will a concern like that ring?
Yes, and the Israeli Transport Ministry has called the flight ban a concession to terrorism. I think it just shows that the Israelis have been stung by this. But I think the key question is, how will they react? Will they react by thinking, well, we need to get those flights resumed, therefore we need to agree a ceasefire? Or will they react by thinking, well, we need to hit Hamas even harder if on day 15 of our campaign they were still capable of carrying out such an effective strike? And you've got to remember that Hamas is still firing rockets out of Gaza at a rate of about 100 a day. Yesterday I saw a salvo of five take off in the space of a moment or two. And so they're still sustaining this campaign despite the huge bombardment that they've suffered.
And what about the life in Gaza now and the reality? We've seen schools hit, we've seen residential apartment blocks hit, and the death toll continuing to rise, somewhere around 600 at the moment.
Yes, of which about a quarter are children. Children are bearing the brunt of this campaign. What you have to remember is two things. First of all, Gaza's 1.8 million people. About half of them are under the age of 18. So about half of all the people here are actually children. And secondly, they've got nowhere to flee to. In other conflicts, people can move to areas that are safe. But Gaza is blockaded by Israel and Egypt, and they don't let anyone move in or out at all, except for a few desperately urgent medical cases. So the result is that when you have a campaign like this going on, people really have nowhere to flee to at all. Their world is this little patch of land, which is 25 miles long and 7 miles wide at its broadest point.
And the reality of that reflected in the number of people which UNRWA, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, is now dealing with. It has escalated to quite an alarming extent over the past 48 hours.
It's soared. It's astonishing. The figure yesterday was that they were sheltering 118,000 people inside their facilities in Gaza. That's mainly schools. As recently as Friday, the figure was 30,000. So it quadrupled in the space of just a few days. And today, no doubt, there will be more people who will be crowding into those facilities. And the question, of course, is, are they genuinely safe there? And the answer is, well, no one can guarantee anyone's safety here in Gaza. And there has been at least one incident of a school being directly shelled by the Israelis, although no casualties seem to have been inflicted. But the truth is they have no option. The best option that they have is to go to a UN property and take their chances.
Can I turn in conclusion, David, to the prospects for peace? Because most sides will say that eventually that's what's going to happen here. There will be some form of a peace deal or a ceasefire agreed upon. What of the significance of Mahmoud Abbas backing the conditions set by Hamas late last night, saying that it's time for peace?
Well, the conditions that Hamas has set for peace are pretty stringent conditions. In particular, they want the blockade of Gaza completely lifted. Now, that will be unacceptable, not only to Israel, but to Egypt as well. So they've set out quite a hard-line position. And that, I think, complicates the whole drive for peace. The one glimmer of good news in all this is that America, after 2 weeks or so of the campaign, has begun a serious diplomatic effort to try and broker a settlement. John Kerry's in Egypt, and they've made it very clear that their goal now is an immediate cessation of hostilities. But the gap between the two sides is very wide, and I suspect it's not going to be bridged soon. And for every hour it's not bridged, more people will flee, more buildings in Gaza will be blown up, and more people will die.
That's David Blair of the Daily Telegraph.